Welcome to Torah Machanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Vesser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perikov Hey, Chapter 25. The previous parak took place in the year 597, right after Galut Yehoyachin, also known as Galut HaCharash Bahamasger. In that parak, Yirmiyahu was shown a vision of two baskets of figs, one beautiful and one rotten, which represented the two parallel Jewish communities, one in Israel and one in Babel. In this parak, we are going to go 7 years back in time to the fourth year of Yehoyakim, before the Galut was even a thought. This fourth year of Yehoyakim is a momentous year. Yehoyakim came to power when Parunacho, the king of Egypt, deposed his younger brother Yehoahaz and anointed him as a vassal king in his stead. Yehoyakim's job was to collect heavy taxes and send them on to Egypt and be a loyal puppet to his master Necho. Meanwhile, the world is exploding, as Assyria and Babylonia are fighting to the death in the northern city of Carchemish, knowing that whoever wins will become the new world empire. In this year, 605, the mighty Assyria, which had been around for almost 1,000 years, falls to the upstart Neo-Babylonia. At this time, King Nebuchadnezzar begins to consolidate his empire and take over Assyrian lands. He quickly scoops up the former Aram and Yisrael, but Malchut Yehuda, Judea, had never belonged to Assyria. They had tried to conquer it, and they almost did, but Hashem made a miracle, and the Assyrian army besieging Jerusalem fell dead in the time of King Chizkiyahu. The Judeans thought that they were safe from the Babylonian onslaught, because they were a vassal to the Egyptians, who had the strength to be a rival superpower and take on the Babylonians. The only problem was that the Egyptians wanted no part of this. Parunacho, after ruling Judea for 4 years, decides that it's in his best interest to retreat to mainland Egypt and to give up his lands in the Middle East. This leaves Judea unprotected and allows Nebuchadnezzar to march right in and take over the country. Now, for some political commentators of the time, this is a big deal, but it's not a religiously meaningful occurrence. There are shifts in the geopolitical landscape that can be explained by thinking about political strategy, troop movement, or organizational abilities of one army over another. But to Yirmiyahu, this event is nothing short of the hands of Hashem. He must convey to the Jews that Babylonia's entrance into the political scene is not happenstance. Rather, it is Hashem reacting to B'nai Yisrael's evil deeds and deciding to bring about the first stage of their punishment. It is a purposeful, not haphazard event, and it is absolutely crucial that they understand this. If they do, if they really understand what Yirmiyahu is trying to tell them, then they can end up saving themselves, their land, and the Beit HaMikdash. But if they don't, they will take one more step forward towards destruction. The parak begins, Hadabar asher haya al Yirmiyahu v'al kol am Yehuda, b'shana harivi'it li'Yehoyakim ben Yosheu melech Yehuda, hi hashana harishonit l'Nebuchadrezzar melech Bavel. The word to Yirmiyahu and all of the nation of Yehuda in the fourth year of Yehoyakim, the king of Yehuda. This was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylonia. It was his first year as emperor, not his first year as king. Incidentally, this is the only time in Tanakh that the Jewish and secular date are mentioned in the same pasuk. So if we ever want to know what happened in the secular world versus the Jewish world any time, we need to either count forwards to this pasuk or count backwards from this pasuk, the fourth year of Yehoyakim, which coincided with the beginning of the Babylonian Empire. Yirmiyahu tells the people that they have been rejecting their prophets and ignoring his advice from the time he started speaking to them in the 13th year of Yoshio. Instead of improving, they've been devolving. Instead of fixing their ways, they become more set in their evil ways. And therefore, says Yirmiyahu in Pasuchet, verse 8, Lachain ko amar Hashem tzvakot, says Hashem, Yan asher lo shamatem et divarai, because you didn't listen to what I said. Verse 9, Hineni sholech v'lakachti et kol mishpachot tzafonu, Hashem, I'm going to take all the families of the north, ve'el Nebuchadrezzar melech Bavel avdi, and I'm going to take Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Bavel, my servant, v'avyotim al ha'aretz hazo v'al yoshveh, I'm going to bring them on this land on an and on its inhabitants, al kol goyim ha'ela saviv, and on all the nations around you, v'hachramtim, I'm going to destroy you, v'samtim l'shama and you're going to be utterly desolate and completely destroyed. In Parag Aleph, chapter 1, we heard about the Sir Nafuach, the boiling pot that was going to overflow. Mitzafon tipatach ra'a al kol yoshvei ha'aretz. From the north, all of the evil is going to come and overflow on the whole land. And how all the families of the north were going to come and take their chairs and sit on the outside the gates of Jerusalem. Finally, we find out who these people are. They are the Babylonians. When Yirmiyahu gave that prophecy in Parag Aleph, there was no country, Babylonia. They were a city-state, an upstart against Assyria. But now, they're a real country. The Nevuah is being actualized. They don't actually live in the north. Their capital, Babylon, is in the east. But they're coming down from the north, from Carchemish. And they're going to enter your country, says Yirmiyahu, and they're going to occupy it. What was vague before is now crystallizing. We have a name, Babylonia. We have a king, Nebuchadnezzar. We have a date. We have a time. The vagueness of the earlier Nevuah allowed there to be a possibility that it could be averted, that the Nevuah would just never be actualized. Here, the Nevuah must happen because it's already starting to come true. Notice that Nebuchadnezzar in this parak is referred to as Avdi, my servant. The word Avdi is reserved for only the most loyal and dedicated people in Jewish history. It's said once about Avraham, a few times about Moshe, a few times about David, King David, and once about Yeshayahu. And now here, about Nebuchadnezzar, the evil king who destroys Bnei Israel. This is language that is supposed to break Bnei Israel's heart. They have lost their positions as the one who follow Hashem and have been supplanted by their own enemy. He is the one who's following Hashem. Whether Nebuchadnezzar is aware of it or not, he is a servant of Hashem and is fulfilling Hashem's mission to punish the Jewish people through his actions. Therefore, he will come in and occupy the country. And then in verse 10, Ve'evadati mehem kol sason v'kol simcha. I'm going to take away from you the voice of happiness and joy. Kol chatan v'kol kala, the voice of the bride and the voice of the groom. Kol rechayim, the voice of the millstone, the or haner, and the light of the candle. Vayta kol ha'aretz hazot l'charava v'lishama. This whole land is going to be desolate. V'avdu ha'goyim ha'ele et melech Babel 70 shana. And these nations will worship the king of Babel for 70 years. Things will be bad. There'll be a loss of happiness, a loss of weddings, which represent hope for the future, a loss of the millstones, which represent the humming of the economy, and a loss of the candlelight, which represents the ability to work at night, the mark of a prosperous and secure society. Indeed, at this time, candles were extremely expensive, but vital for progress. With no light in the winter, the country had to shut down at about 5 p.m., and basically, a day's work brought you, the money you would earn in a day, brought you about 10 minutes of candlelight in this era. The millstones and the candles show prosperity. The bride and the groom get married because there's excitement about what could be. All of this will be shut down during the Babylonian occupation. But it has an end date. It will last for 70 years. And after that, Hashem will have a reckoning with the Babylonians as well. They will be punished for what they deserve to be punished for. In fact, historically, this actually happened. Babylonia was one of the shortest ruling empires in the ancient world. It lasted for about only 68 years. We look carefully at the first 12 psukim of this parak and try to notice what is not mentioned. And that is, there's no mention in this parak of a chorban, of a destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, or of exile. It seems to be that if Jehoiakim and Bnei Israel would accept this occupation as their punishment, then it can be stopped here. The terrible things that Yirmiyahu has been prophesying never have to happen. Not that this occupation isn't bad, it is, but it's nowhere near as bad as what actually happens or what Yirmiyahu foretells in Parak 19 when he smashes the clay vessel. The tshuva that's necessary at this time has shifted. Until now, Bnei Israel were told that they could change their corrupt deeds and they could avert all punishment. At this point, it's not working. They're not changing. They've been sinning for so long that an aspect of the punishment has to happen. Part of it has to actualize so that they see that they're getting punished for their deeds. But the tshuva now is accepting this as a punishment. By seeing it from this perspective, by seeing the Babylonians coming as retribution for their bad deeds, they are accepting that Hashem is in control of their lives and has the ability to interact with them through the events of the world. Just as this type of acceptance is a humility, and that would be the first step in a long-lasting tshuva, so too B'nai Yisrael and Yehoyakim have to change themselves in order to have this perspective. If they don't, then the punishment will have to keep getting worse and worse until there's no denying that it's Hashem bringing them their punishment. This parak represents one of the core themes of Sefer Yirmiyahu and of Nevi'im Achronim in general. The prophet sees geopolitical events as the hand of Hashem. Nothing is happenstance, but rather it is Hashem communicating with the Jewish people through nature and through world events. So this parak really represents a shift in what Yirmiyahu demands of the Jews. No longer does he say, you can change your deeds and nothing bad will happen to you. Something bad will happen to you. The question is, what's your perspective on it? Do you see it as the hand of God or do you not? In the second part of the parak, Hashem tells Yirmiyahu to feed a kos yayin chema, of a glass full of wine of wrath, of Hashem's anger, to all of the nations in the area. Yehuda is one of them, but so is Egypt, Moab, Tyre, Edom, and many others. The point of drinking this wine of wrath is that, in Pasuk Kav Zayin, verse 27, that you should shitu, drink it, v'shichru, and get drunk, v'kiyu, and you'll vomit. And then, v'naflu, v'lo takumu, you're going to fall and never get up. So Hashem is feeding them the wine of wrath because he is now going to come and punish all of them. Notice that Hashem's wrath is not directed only at the people of Judea, but at all the people of the region. We aren't sure why all the people in the area have to get punished, except that Yirmiyahu gives us a clue by quoting from the Navi Amos, who lived a generation before him, and explained that each of these nations were also guilty of creating a corrupt society. The same seems to be true here. It's not only Yehuda who is corrupt, but all the countries around them. This makes sense because they were all following the same amoral form of idolatry that didn't promote a civil society. The opposite is true. It promoted a society where each person only looks out for him or herself and steps on anyone below them on the food chain. Yirmiyahu tells them in Pasuk Kavtet, verse 29, Ki hinei ba'ir asher nekrash mi'ala anochi mechel lahareya. The city that my name is called on it, the city of Jerusalem, that's where I'm going to start my punishment. Ba'atem, hinaketi naku? Do you think you're going to go unpunished, you people of the whole region? Once the sword is coming to B'nai Israel, Hashem will look carefully at the deeds of the surrounding nations as well and see that they are also evil. Why should only Yerushalayim get punished when actually all the countries in the region are acting in the same way? This image of feeding all the nations in the area from the same cup creates a devastating picture. B'nai Israel, who have prophets, who have the Torah, and a unique relationship with Hashem, have thrown their lot in with the surrounding nations, taking on their idols and their ideals. Now they are all being fed from the same cup, as Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and destroy all of them. B'nai Israel, however, have a reprieve. They can do what Yirmiyahu tells them to do in the beginning of the parak, and that is, they can recognize that the occupation of the Babylonians comes from Hashem. Just that act of recognition is a tshuva for them, and that act alone can prevent their punishment from getting any worse. The Chorban doesn't have to happen. The exile doesn't have to happen. It's up to them. It's up to Yehoyakim and his leadership, but it's also up to the people. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilo Nishmat Malka Esther Batzvi Yosef.